This is Mary Flynn, and I'm talking to Richard Carline at the Blackbird office at Virginia Commonwealth University. Delighted, I think, is a word that applies to your work as well, that there's a certain playfulness quality, not just to that, but a delightful sort of elegance that is in your drawings and in your videos. And I'm thinking of another video that was in your show at 1708 last spring that was clips of a stair, essentially.
Yes, it was.
How did you put that together?
Well, John, I mean, it's the same situation. I mean, he passed away, and it was very upsetting to me. I couldn't imagine living one's life without images of Fred Astaire. Tap dancing is Hardaway. And one of my favorite dance numbers is the so-called Shorty George number that he did with Rita Hayworth. I think it was 1942 from the film, MGM film, You Were Never Lovelier. And it's just a wonderful swing number. And I decided to re-choreograph it, but I've had it for years. I decided, well, this could be re-choreographed, and I used a similar approach to it that I did with the Flight Song piece, where I use a chance-determined structure. I had no idea what the final result would be. Though in both instances, I should say, in both cases, both of those videos, I wanted it to come to an end. I didn't leave it open-ended, and it does follow, though I'm moving back forwards in time, that there is an end. In the staircase, I do finally get up to the steps. You just see the feet arrive, then it ends and repeats. And with the Fred Astaire, they are in this embrace, tap dancing in an embrace, and they go off the movie set. So it does end. It does put a period to it. But other than that, I wish that Astaire was still around, because I'd love to send him a copy of that. I don't know. He might be terribly offended or think it's a joke. I don't know. But he might find it delightful. Rita Hayworth, too. Because it isolates and repeats so many of the movements. It allows you to see patterns of the movement that otherwise would be lost. You get so caught up in the, you know, just propelling forward. And they're moving in so many wonderful ways. And when you start to see the little nuances, the way Fred Astaire would change the position of his hand while in the air. And it changes the whole character, the whole phrase of the dance movement. It's exciting. Or the way Rita's skirt rises and falls. One of the repeats was 11 times. It took forever. But she's spinning around, and the skirt goes up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down. And it's delightful. It allows us to, one thing is I like about video, allows us an intimate look at things.
It also measures time.
Oh, yes.
You can't do in flat work.
No, you can't do it.
Is that one of the attractions of video for you?
Yes, it's measurable. The time is measurable. If you have a foot of tape, that's something that you can manipulate in various ways. If you're interested in the sound or the kinesthetics of it or the image, you can play with this in a variety of ways. You can put one image next to another. They don't necessarily have to be related, as it were. You could just take 50 ads off of television and take them out of the context of the show that they were shown in and just hook them together. And it's hysterical. I mean, I've done that. I have a video. I haven't finished. I've worked on it for years. It's images of former President Reagan and his wife leaving the White House lawn for Camp David, and it shows them walking across the lawn to the helicopter, and then that would be Friday evening. Then on Sunday, between 7 and 7:15, they would return and walk another path to the White House in the helicopter. And I have hundreds of those that I videotaped over an 8-year period. And the tape I'm doing together, he's waving one way, and he's waving another. And Nancy is always in the same, she's just lockstepped in these gestures. And she looks over her left shoulder, waves with her right hand, then she looks at Ron, then she looks back towards the pilot of the helicopter and waves. And when you hook them together, in one way it's absurd, of course, but in another, these simple gestures. This is, here I am, the President of the United States, and here's his wife, and yes, there's the press corps, and yes, we've had a wonderful time at Camp David. And I think it says something about not just video or just about president. It says something about the way we receive information today. Mm-hmm. If you have a remote control, for example, and many persons do, of course, on their TV, and you click and say that you have a cable hookup, or you have 40, 50, 60 channels to go through, and nothing is right, is it? You just click, 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 click from one to another. Well, all that's being recorded on the brain. And in an odd way, some kind of sense or nonsense is being made of this. It is there. It's been it's registered. It's like looking at the front page of a newspaper, and you see something happen in Somalia, and something happened in Richmond, and something happened in Lima, Peru, and something happened in Bosnia, and these are all different events, and the eye just scans from one to another. There's the weather report, a little thing about the weather, how to conserve water, all this on the front page. And as we scan from one thing to another, it's like a mosaic. And if we make any sense of the world, this is your new, this is the world today, this is the news today, we have to make some sense out of it. And that participatory aspect of it, that the reader of a newspaper is really the final editor. The people don't read everything, they're very selective. And as we go through the newspaper, we have, as Marcia McLuhan pointed out, all this bad news, that's the news, surrounded by all the good news, which is the ads, free, two for one, marked down, and so forth. And that is something that we share. I don't think it's just, you know, certainly not just artists or creative people or thinkers, but it happens every day of the week. And one thing can follow anything on television, and it does. And we start to look at life and nature around us that way, and then it begins to take on a kind of import, at least in terms of individual experience. One of the things I think is fascinating about so-called postmodern art, and I don't know what that is, but it's other than the fact that it does appeal to a serious audience. And the serious audience is an audience that recognizes that it's part of the artist's process. Now, I'm not talking about liking or disliking, but that audience is part of the process.
That does seem to be the difference between, say, a canvas of Picasso's, where
yes,
he did it all.
All.
And something like contemporary video art, where you're expected to be a part of it.
Definitely. Yeah. And you can draw upon all areas of your experience. I mean, that's implicit. You'll draw upon some areas of your experience. You're going to make some connections. And that's exciting. Actually, it's sort of a late 20th century, 21st century version of the symbolist idea. In Mallarmé, for example, where you're a participant, I mean, he's just giving you this, the use of language. There's so many blanks and intervals and gaps in it. And he's never really describing anything. He's recording the effects of things that they had upon his perception. And so we can read the same poem a whole life, and it's a fluid situation where we're constantly redefining its meaning or import. And other kinds of literature, that is impossible. It seems to come with electronic technology. It's something in sound, and I mean, here we have this digital tape recorder, and so forth.
No, it's probably that the technology does seem to be crucial to this, because most of the readers of Blackbird are probably verbal people, are people who deal with words.
I would imagine, yes.
Contemporary images.
Oh, sure.
And I think the kind of abstraction that appears as a part of the kind of chance-determined things that you're talking about, mm-hmm, is very frustrating sometimes for people who are used to, mm-hmm, dealing with, mm-hmm, the verbal landscape. Mm-hmm. And it's something that did not happen in abstract painting at the turn of the last century, but is happening now. The technology gives you ways to mimic the mind in different kinds of circumstances.
Yes, and I think that our younger citizens especially are very receptive to this.
Yeah.
That's my sense of it anyway. Yeah.
There's also a lot of video that's being done that's very sort of like documentary. In the sense, thinking of the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts this past year, it's had a series of three shows that deal with contemporary video art, and thinking of Nishat's Rapture,
yes,
that's beautiful to look at, but
yes,
very sort of like more like a documentary film than like the kind of video that you've done.
Oh,
what
definitely.
What's your feeling about that sort of divergence or connection? Is it our need for narrative, or?
Well, she's presenting something sequentially, but I think what's interesting about it, there's sound, but there's not much dialogue, if any. I mean, in the sense that we think of, say, a narrative film or narrative video. And because it's exotic to us Westerners, I mean, they're in this desert-like area, this very arid area, and these women are involved in what appears to be a ritualistic activity, ceremonial, ritualistic. They're not really individuals. We don't think of them as distinct individuals, the way she's made the film. We see them as a group, a kind of entity. So they're representing Nishat's view of, a particular view of women in the Middle East. So from our eye, it has a sort of almost, I would say, an exotic allure. I don't know how else to put that exactly. But the fact that it's ritualistic, and especially towards the end when they start to throw the sand up over their heads and they're murmuring. But we're not told what this means. We're not introduced to characters. We sense that it's moving towards some sort of conclusion, but we're not really sure what it is until it occurs. So this is a new kind of narrative. It's all visual imagery in time. And I think that we're invited, in effect, to supply our own narrative based upon whatever knowledge we have, say, of the situation of women in the Middle East traditionally in relationship to this current situation. So that it's foreign. This was not made by an American. You get it right away. This is not a Hollywood production. We're not sure why they're there, but it's been elaborately staged. This has been very carefully conceptualized on the part of the video artist. And it's something about her insistence, obsessiveness, and drive to get this onto video that also becomes part of its content. I think that's inescapable. But other than that, my response to it was essentially visceral when I watched it. I didn't think about anything. I just got caught up in the movement, the various kinds of activity, the incessant, persistent sound score, and these murmurs. It was very visceral. I would say it was very visceral as opposed to, say, an intellectual response. But as we sit here, I think back on it, I'm calling upon my experience with it. And I'm phrasing that or framing that in a particular way. But if we were to walk right now into the Virginia Museum that was playing, I don't know what I wouldn't have anything to say about it. It would be very difficult to analyze it while it's going on. I know I'd get caught up in it. I think this is one of the allures of video as opposed to film. And the fact that video can be looked at in a room, you don't have to turn the lights out, that copies are easily attainable. You can check them out of libraries, you can buy copies. Seeing that film in your home would be a very different experience from seeing it, say, at the Whitney Museum of Art or at the Virginia Museum of Art. It would have a very different effect, I think. Tremendously different. And that's one of the things that's happened since the video. I mean, even with Hollywood films, yes, you can go to the theater and see something in CinemaScope or whatever, in a large screen with surround sound, and then you get this image that collapses into 26 inches or whatever you have at home. And the viewing experience and the relationship between the viewer and the film is completely changed. Some things look marvelous in the theater and they look awful on TV, and conversely, video of a Hollywood film on TV sometimes is enhanced. One of the things I've noticed that particularly in serious Hollywood films, I would say that I put the serious in quotation marks, I don't know if there's anything left that's really serious out there, but so-called serious films often on TV, they take on a comical quality and it's unintentional. It's one of the things that happened with television. You think of the old Frankenstein films and Dracula films and mummy films from the 1930s, the 1940s. And when TV came along and that the Late Show, this was back in the late 50s and early 60s, and they started to play these films, well, they seem hysterical. I mean, this guy wrapped up, I mean, he's obviously Boris Karloff, wrapped up in bandages, you know, coming towards the camera. And it takes on a comical effect. It's not intentional.
And thinking of the variety, the kind of video experience that's around now, the piece that the museum bought by Bill Viola.
The portrait piece, yeah.
And that's fascinating in a completely different way.
In a different way, because it's still, but it isn't. It's like this huge portrait onto the wall. And by the way, I love the way they placed it, because they placed it between two galleries. And while you're viewing it, people walk through there to get from one gallery to another. So you're constantly reminded that you're looking at a video image, which I think is terrific, because you can see the shadow of the passersby on the on the screen. And you have to look very, very carefully at that. I mean, you find it's a different looking experience because things are moving so very, very slowly. And time just seems to stretch. And speaking for myself, I'll get caught up in two or three of the, is it five or six people? I get looking, I say, I want to detect the change. In the meantime, because I'm looking at one area, I look at the other two characters, say, in the group, and the hand has moved, and I didn't see it. It's so subtle. So that time really is, becomes something almost concrete, truly palpable. And I think the people that he used were interesting because the formality of their position makes me think of formal portraits. I thought of Goya, I thought of Velasquez, I thought of Ang, I thought of Degas, I thought of Picasso. I mean, you're just this rush of images, but it's not a painting because it's moving. It makes you self-conscious. I think it makes one self-conscious, like, how am I seeing what I'm looking at? And then once that question is posed, like, well, how am I? What is going on here? Why am I sitting here paying attention to this? And you get an almost obsessive situation as the artist who made the piece. And I think he is an obsessive artist.
Well, that seems to be something that many artists I know, you and Elizabeth King, are both on this issue of Blackbird, and both of you are, to a degree, I would say, obsessive artists.
Yeah.
Quite remarkable and wonderful. What, just to sort of end, it is the 21st century.
Right.
What art that is being made now do you think sort of expresses that? Where would you look to sort of see that and find that?
I think, though I don't think it's been fully developed, fully plumbed, if it ever could be, but I think in the area of so-called performance art, which is a term I don't like, but there it is, I think that's where you can bring everything, every technology, all of history, all of the images out of history, literature, you can bring everything into a very complex, open-ended interface. It is collaborative, which seems the spirit of the times. This idea of the isolated genius in his or her studio and all that sort of talk seems silly now. But if you bring several geniuses together and you're not really sure at the outset what's going to come out of it, and everybody has different areas of experience and certain technologies that they enjoy working with, certain materials they enjoy working with, and it's kept in a true collaborative spirit, which is difficult. It's very, very difficult. Because then you have the ego, you have taste gets into it. And the kind of jockeying that would take place without feeling you're compromising, I think that's a rich situation.